Preston once said, innovation is taking two things that already exist and putting them together in a new way. Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of EE Journal's long-running electronic engineering podcast called Amelia's Weekly Fish Fry, which is written, produced, and hosted by me, Amelia Dalton. My friends, I've got an interview doubleheader to throw your way this week. First up, Peggy Carriers from Avnet joins me to discuss the electronic supply chain shortages we're experiencing today and why she believes that constraint drives innovation. A little later on, Rob Maines from the Chips Alliance is also joining me to discuss how they are collaborating with a variety of different companies and universities to create a chip design ecosystem, and how they are also developing a new unified memory standard with RISC-V International. So, without further ado, let's welcome Peggy to Fish Fry. Hi, Peggy. Thank you so much for joining me.
Hi, Amelia. Thanks for having me on your podcast today.
Absolutely. Now, within the electronic engineering ecosystem, we're seeing a lot of different shortages these days. But even with those shortages, they pose a lot of challenges for us as designers, right? But at the same time, they can also accelerate design innovation. So, Peggy, what's your take on this?
Yeah, engineers have a tough job today. They're having to design new products, and some of the lead times are well over a year out. And when you're trying to plan for something that you want to take to market more quickly than that, it can be a challenge. But when you think about it, this industry is very cyclical. We see shortages about every 4 years. This one obviously is much more severe than we've seen in the past. And I think the different pieces of it that are playing into it and factoring into the shortage, such as raw material shortages, labor shortages that are continuing and systemic, is really driving us to look at design differently. How can we use less hardware and make it more powerful with more software? Software 10 years ago and software today are completely different animals. How you code, the API capabilities that gives us flexibility in disparate applications. So I think designers are looking at things beyond just the hardware. And you know, a lot of engineers that come out of school today aren't looking at discrete components. They're looking at capabilities and modules and integrating systems. It's a different way of looking at design.
I definitely agree with you. Now, I've heard you say constraint drives innovation. So what do you think that means for designers moving forward?
You know, I think every time we look at challenges, we rise to those challenges and we find different ways of working around it. Human nature is amazing. And what we've done to innovate over time has realized some of the best inventions. I mean, look at the light bulb. And the light bulb that was designed originally is completely different today when you think about there can be 12 components driving an IoT feature in a light bulb. The necessity that happens out of that is when you look at a layout of a design, you have to consider not only what do you want that thing to accomplish, but how are you going to make it? And that design for manufacturability is such a critical component. And I think that's playing into accelerating the innovation cycle.
That makes sense. Now, let's circle back to those more capabilities in smaller footprints. This also plays into this overall idea, right?
Absolutely. Think about the cell phone. A cell phone 15 years ago, what was the capability in a phone? You could make a call, you could check your voicemail. That was about it. I don't think I've listened to a voicemail probably in the last 3 years, but a phone today is your personal assistant. It's your camera. Everything is on an app, from banking, investments, your job, authentication. It's all condensed into that cell phone. So that's a great example of how we've taken less hardware, shrunk it down, and put infinitely more capability inside of it.
Absolutely. Now, you guys just celebrated your 100th anniversary. So that has a last decade of expertise falling into play here. Now, that has also helped you guys mitigate situations like this, right? So do you think these fluctuations have spurred even stronger innovation than in previous years or decades even?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Avnet sits in the middle of the supply chain between our suppliers and our customers. And our claim to fame really is that design chain, that's the cornerstone of what we do, but also supply chain. And I think we've kind of looked at them as discrete value propositions in the past. Now we're looking at that as an integrated value chain where we move from that design quickly into production because product life cycles are changing faster and faster and faster. And we have to keep up with that innovation to help our customers be profitable in the market with their products.
That makes sense. All right, Peggy, I think it's time for your off-the-cuff question now. We're changing things up a bit, and I'm going to ask you about the strangest thing that you've ever eaten. What is it, Peggy?
Oh, wow. That's a great question. I have lived all over the world, traveled all over the world, so you know I've been exposed to a lot of different types of food. But hey, since it's the fish fry, I'll talk about a fish.
All right.
I was in Malaysia at a business meeting and we had an outdoor table and they brought the fish to us and we had to approve the fish before it was cooked. But when it was brought out, the host offered me the fish cheeks. First of all, I didn't even know fish had cheeks. And so I was a sport and I ate the fish cheeks and hey, it was actually pretty good. Tasted like chicken.
Nice. I'm not sure I've ever eaten fish cheeks before. That's fantastic. I might have to go try it now. Excellent. Well, Peggy, I think that's all I have time for today. Thank you so much for joining me.
Oh, thanks for having me, Amelia. It was great to talk about the shortage and the possibilities are endless.
All right. It's time to bring in Rob Maines from the Chips Alliance. Let's go. Hi, Rob. Thank you so much for joining me.
It's a pleasure to be here.
So we're talking about the Chips Alliance today, but Rob, for my audience who may not know, what is the Chips Alliance all about?
Well, Chips Alliance is a gathering of both universities and industrial companies who are collaborating to build an overall chip design ecosystem. So that goes anywhere from architecture to implementation to EDA tooling, and also process design kits, which are, of course, the technology ingredients necessary to build a chip. So we have a number of different partner companies and universities of different backgrounds that come together to collaborate on topics of shared interest and challenges that all of the industry faces. And we do this in an open format. So we welcome many different participants into the group and encourage their collaboration.
Okay, so Rob, RISC-V is a hot topic here at EE Journal, and I saw that the Chips Alliance has been working with the RISC-V International Group to develop a new unified memory standard. So can you tell my audience a bit more about this unified memory standard and how the Chips Alliance is helping develop this new standard?
Yes, I'd be happy to do that. So I do work, or Chips Alliance specifically works very closely with RISC-V, and I work very closely with Mark Himmelstein, of course, is the CTO of the group. So we work on a number of different topics together in a collaborative fashion as part of the Linux Foundation. And relative to the cache coherency work that we're doing, this was work that was started originally by Sci-5 and then adopted also by Western Digital. And what we're trying to do is to promote an open standard for cache coherency. If you look at the evolution of microprocessors and then what I will call assistant or accelerators to work on different problems, such as machine learning, could be databases, any number of different topics, what we're trying to do is to take the memory coherency problem out of the traditional CPU and distribute it across different members of the ecosystem to enable them to work in a collaborative fashion and also to ensure that the memory is maintained in a coherent fashion. So this requires some degree of management and intelligence by all the different collaborators. So the idea is, and Mark originally suggested this, is that we need to industrialize or bulletproof this protocol to ensure that all different participants that come into this have a good solid playing field to operate upon. So that's the inherent idea of what we're trying to do. And so we have a number of different entities collaborating this, and we're working towards a 2.0 version of the standard.
Excellent. Now, I also saw that the CHIPS Alliance is working to help accelerate the design of open source chiplets with the AIB 2.0 specification. So can we talk about this project as well? And how exactly is the CHIPS Alliance helping this project?
So this is a very exciting area. And this, what's interesting is this kind of stems back into where I began my career, in the early 1980s. But I think the chiplet technology is quite exciting, because what it effectively is doing is creating a portfolio, or what I say is a hand of cards, that allows different companies to pick IP ingredients from a menu, such as provided, example by Intel, but also by others, that allows for them to build a complex ecosystem of IP that can then be put on chiplet technology. And so Intel, originally donated this IP, and they've been working in a collaborative fashion with about 12 or 15 different players to take the standard even further, which is the 2.0 protocol. And then there is also the AIB.0 or -0 protocol that can be used by any foundry as an example. So this really opens and broadens the ecosystem to different participants. And there, I know there are startups that are working in this too that are very interested in this. So I think it's an exciting time to see how this evolves. As you may know, constructing extremely large die is a definitive material science challenge. I think the idea of breaking this into smaller chiplets that then get put on a higher level package makes a lot of sense to improve reliability.
I think you're right. Now, Rob, there has been a lot of work done to better provide support for System Verilog using open source tools as well, right? Can we talk about that a bit as well?
Yes. So System Verilog is an exciting area, and when combined with UVM, provides a very good standard or platform for reusable design. So what we're seeing as a kind of as a background, and this has been ongoing over a number of years, but chip designers are much more becoming software developers effectively. And so System Verilog and UVM are steps in that direction. So one of the things that we've been doing with partners is to improve the overall System Verilog ecosystem. So this includes the SV test scoreboard or test set that was donated by Google. And this effectively helps to drive towards standard tools and quality metrics that can be then gauged that overall ecosystem. We also work further with the Verilator open source functional simulator and Ant Micro as an example to extend the stratified scheduling mechanism for that, which allows for improved event-driven simulation than what previously existed in this. So this changes the scheduling algorithm within the simulator, which is a fundamental component, but allows for a better representation of the scheduling that occurs with System Verilog. And a user, of course, can switch either the traditional static scheduler that exists there or switch to the new one, which takes advantage of different processes and threads that exist within the simulator and leverages the strength of the underlying operating system to help schedule that. So we see this as a big step forward. I think it also shows the power and contributions that can be made in the open source community by different participants and solve some of these challenging problems that exist.
Okay, so you touched upon it a little bit, but let's talk about your work on the dynamic stratified scheduler implementation in Verilator. Let's talk a bit more about that.
Yeah, so that's what I was just alluding to relative to extending the System Verilog ecosystem and UVM. So specifically what this allows is for better event-driven representation within a System Verilog design that the simulator can now handle. So what can happen is that different events can be triggered or retracted by System Verilog statements. And this really requires multiple threads or processes of execution to exist that can then either go forward or backward in time that the scheduler can now accommodate within a given System Verilog design. Static scheduling does not allow for this dynamic behavior because some of these events actually don't occur or trigger until based upon the actual thread of execution. So the dynamic scheduler allows for this now to occur and provide more robust simulation or execution possibilities than was previously existent.
Now, Rob, I think that's all the normal questions I have for you today. Okay. So it's time for your off the cuff. Now, since you haven't been on my show before, we're doing a little COVID special these days. So a lot of us can't have our favorite foods because they're in another country. You need a passport to get there, or heck, the restaurant's closed. So, Rob, if you could have one meal right now, it doesn't matter where it is in the world, what would you have?
You know, that's a good question. So I'll let everyone know in a little secret that I am an avid chef. So the COVID thing, which has been very unfortunate and tragic for all of us as folks of the world, you know, it's certainly been a challenge. But in specific to your question, so I'm an avid cook, so I make my own meals. But I think, you know, I would go back to Taiwan. I used to work very closely with TSMC and go enjoy one of the meals that I would have there of their local cuisine. And I enjoyed both the conversation with my colleagues there and then some of the food that we had there. Specifically, I remember having, I think it was called black chicken soup or something like that. And it literally was dark in color. So it was something I'd never seen before. And it was quite flavorful. So that would be my answer.
That's a great answer. Thank you so much. Awesome. Well, Rob, I think that's all I have time for today. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you so much. I enjoyed the conversation.
And before we go, don't forget to check out my brand new maker-themed monthly fish fry podcast series called Makers Today. In our fourth episode of this series, launched earlier this week, I chat with Kitty Young from Art by Physicist. Kitty and I chat about the variety of super cool designs she created as part of her successful Kickstarter campaign, what her work as a creative technologist and senior program manager at the garage entailed, her passion for quantum computing, and how the worlds of high-tech fashion and quantum computing overlap in her life. Hey, have you checked out EE Journal on social media yet? Well, you should. You can find us at facebook.com/EEJournal. If you're into Twitter, you can monitor our tweets at EEJournalTFM. And don't forget, if you want to follow my personal Twitter account, check out AmeliaD1978. And hey, if LinkedIn is more your thing, sure, I dig it. You can follow us or me on LinkedIn as well. And we have a YouTube channel, youtube.com/EEJournal. Folks, it is chock full of all kinds of techie videos, including our very popular Chalk Talk webcast series hosted by yours truly. And you can subscribe to our EE Journal YouTube channel as well. Also, by clicking the links below the player on this week's Fish Frying page, you can subscribe to this here podcast through Spotify, Podbean, or Apple Podcasts. And remember, if you'd like to further support this podcast, please leave me a review on that podcasting platform of your choice. Also, if you'd like any more information about the stories covered in today's show, just head on over to eejournal.com and look for this week's Fish Frying page. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. If you know of any cool new technology or, heck, you just want to chat, shoot me a line at amelia@eejournal.com or post a comment on our forums on EE Journal. For the week of September 24th, 2021, I'm Amelia Dalton, and you've been fried.